Hello and welcome to another episode of In Conversation With by Kangaroo Minds. I'm Vedika and today we have with us co-founder and CEO of Invisible Illness India, Jasdeep Mao. Jasdeep is a neuropsychologist qualified from Wales as well as diploma holder in emotional intelligence. Jasdeep's work caters to corporates, educational institutions and individuals. As someone who's highly committed to make a change, make mental health more accessible, she also runs a free support group and subsidized health services. Today, we're going to talk to Jasdeep more about the stigma around mental health and how that can be a barrier to seeking help. But before we begin, we would like to put out a trigger warning for our audience. If at any point during this episode, should you find yourself feeling triggered or distressed, we urge you to please take a step back and look after yourself. Should you need any additional support resources, you can also find them on our website. Now, without taking much time, let's dive in to hear more from Jasdeep.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much, Vedika, for that introduction and for inviting me for your show. It's really great what you're doing and I'm happy to be a part of it.
Now, I'm really looking forward to, you know, the conversation, especially because the way we see mental health being portrayed, I think stigma can play such a huge role, right, in terms of whether it's just me forming a narrative or whether it's even being a barrier to someone seeking help or not even being able to speak out. For a common person, how would you define stigma?
In layman's terms, so stigma would be if you look at something and rather than seeing it for what it is, you see it for what you believe it to be. And that belief is somewhere has a negative connotation to it or has a barrier to it. That's when I would consider that stigma. So if you see, I mean, simply mental illness, rather than seeing it as what it is, as anxiety or as depression, it's seen as what the negative connotation that's given to it by in certain sections of society. It's seen as weakness. It's seen as, so those are the sort of, like mentioned, the, you know, when you have a different perception, a negative perception towards something, and that's what we consider stigma. And when that stigma, when that negative perception starts to affect the way you look at something, the way you treat it, the way you approach it, that's when it really is stigma. So it's not just a perception, that's just prejudice then, that I'm prejudiced towards something. A stigma is when in action it translates into the negativity translates into action also and creates a barrier is when we consider it stigma.
Right. So, you know, Jasdeep, why do you think that there is so much stigma around mental health and mental illness?
So in most cases, stigma, prejudice, or any bias takes place from a place of lack of awareness, a lack of understanding, a lack of knowledge. When we go back in time and we look at mental illness from its origin, when researchers, scientists back in the day started studying about mental health, about psychology, it was so vague, so ill-defined, and it already had such a different meaning to it to begin with. Mental illness was always looked at as something paranormal, looked at as a problem that is either this or that. There is no middle. It was always looked at as something that this, it's either the person is sane or absolutely insane. There was no middle ground in it. So from the origins of the perception of what mental illness was looked at as, to where it is now with kind of research, awareness, science, advancement in studies, in more understanding, in like looking at it culturally, demographically, in terms of so many things, it's the knowledge around it, the education around it has grown tremendously, which didn't exist. It didn't exist at all. There was zero understanding. And even now, you know, I will still say that we still know more about space and the moon than we know about our own brain. And that is the truth. Like, even neuroscientists will tell you that there is a limitation to how much we know about the brain. And that's what causes the stigma, you know, and that's what has always caused the stigma. It's because when you don't understand something is when you look at it negatively and perceive it negatively, because it comes from a place of fear even then, because you don't understand it.
You know, one more thing that, you know, especially when it comes to stigma, is that when people start talking about their mental health, or that they say, you know, okay, I'm going through something, there's this perception that you're playing like a victim card or a mental health card, or you're being attention seeking. Like, why do you think we still hold that view? Because especially if you compare it to a physical health condition, we never treat, you know, physical health conditions with that view either.
It's as simple as with a physical health condition, we can see it. It's visible to us. We can see that the person is suffering. We can see blood. We can see plasters. We can see surgery. We can see stitches. We can see bruises, aches, pains. We can see someone gasping for air when they can't breathe. We can see them struggle. Whereas with a mental illness, it's invisible. And that's what brings about the question, the doubt of whether it's real or not, because I can't see it. I can't see in a report also, like with any other physical illness that you can't see, say for cancer, you can't see cancer, but a report, a scan can tell you that there is cancer.
Right.
With mental illness, there isn't even that for that kind of proof, evidence, justification, you know, for people. And the psychometric testing is not qualified enough to compare to blood tests, MRIs, CT scans, things like that. It's not comparable because it is not as scientifically renowned as those other tests are. It's not so well based in research comparatively. So when you can't see something, when it's not tangible, how can I believe it? And that's where, you know, the question of, is this person lying? Is this person saying the truth? Is this real? Is it not? Is the doubt is there because A, I can't see it. B, I've never experienced it. So if I've never experienced it, how do I even know if something like this is possible to experience? The biggest difficulty people have with accepting mental illness is that I've also been through a difficult time, but I didn't go through this. So how do I know that what you're going through is real or not? Because A, I didn't go through it. B, there is no way for you to prove that you're actually going through this. So how am I supposed to believe it? Therefore, the doubt that maybe you're lying, maybe you're doing it for attention, maybe you're doing it because you're feeling neglected, or that you just like everybody looking after you and taking care of you all the time, XYZ.
Right. Do you think also, you know, when it comes to that sort of stigma that, you know, you're attention seeking, or you're doing it because, you know, you just want validation, or you just want to be cared for, etc. Do you think like stigma in that sense can also become a barrier to someone actually seeking help in that case? Because they may feel that they won't be believed.
Absolutely. This is an everyday phenomenon. Every single day I will meet somebody or speak to somebody who will tell me, but if I tell them, will they believe me? But I did tell them and they didn't believe me.
And I
still know people who are getting help. They after through all the difficulty of the stigma, they still forged through and said that I will get help. They're getting help. After that, also, it's a constant battle of you're wasting money. You don't need this. You're faking it. This is not real. You just need to get your asked to work, or you just need to study, you need to eat better, you need to work out, you need to do yoga. It's always something else. It's always something else. So yes, most definitely, it's a huge barrier for people when they're trying to seek help. Is that, will anybody even believe what I'm going through? Or will anyone even understand it? Because the five to seven people I've expressed it to don't. So even most people even come to doubt that will even a mental health professional understand it? Because nobody else does. So what makes you different? Which is another thing we're also taught in terms of stigma, is that help is always at home.
Right.
You know, in an Indian culture, we are always taught help is always at home. First go to family. First go to your friends. Don't take your problems outside the house, which is another whole barrier of the stigma that creates issues for people to seek help. Is that if you're going for help outside the home, there's something really wrong with you.
Right.
And it's unfixable then. Because if we can't fix it, no one can fix it. So,
you know, like in that case, I mean, you just mentioned a very valid point that especially from a cultural context, how we're taught that, you know, help is at home, like, you know, everything should center around your home. But what do people do in case, you know, number one, that they're living in a toxic household or where they're living with the abuser itself? So home is not a safe place. Or when you know, your family is not going to accept it. Like, no matter what you do, they're not going to accept it. You're going to get things like, and I'm sure you've seen it a lot, even in COVID, where, you know, the older generation would tell younger people, think happy thoughts, don't be negative, or try this YouTube video, you know, that I saw, and like meditate, or listen to this person. How do you deal with that?
I said this in a lot of different places and circumstances. So when I started off as a psychologist, because I'm surrounded by mental health professionals all the time, and I'm talking to them all the time, in my head, the stigma didn't exist.
Right.
Until I spoke to people outside of that circle. Mm. So when I was studying, when I was practicing, when I started my internships, when I was constantly surrounded by mental health professionals and people who are in the field. So it never hit me until I stepped out of that and started to do what I do. And in terms of my company, which is when random people would come up to me at parties, at bars, and would start talking to me about mental health. And some of the things people said would shock me, would really, really shock me. Because at that point, what I was doing was I was looking at everything from a perspective of arrogance. As looking at this from, I know and you don't know, therefore you are not as smart as I am and I'm smarter than you are. However, what I learned over time was that arrogance is only another added barrier in order to bring about mental health awareness and change, you know, the situation around us. So, and I always say this to everybody that I interact with, that education and genuine dialogue is the only way to get past stigma. It's the only way. And when I say education and honest dialogue, I mean having a heartfelt dialogue with somebody and making them understand in the most patient manner possible. Because as soon as you get angry and arrogant about what you're trying to say, you've lost the battle right there, because the person sitting in front of you now already thinks that what you're saying is rubbish. On top of that, you seem a little unstable yourself. So you've kind of defeated the purpose of that. So I think it's really mindful. I know it's really difficult to do this. I understand, because I know how difficult it is to do this. But I do also feel that it's supremely important to calmly tell someone that I understand where you're coming from and I know what you're saying, and you probably have value in what you're saying when you tell me to do yoga and have positive thoughts. But where I'm coming from is I actually suffer from something that's more out of my control than is in my control. There is a part of it that's in my control that I am trying to take charge of. There is a part of it that isn't in my control that I don't completely comprehend also. So it's more biological, it's more physical. It's not only to do with something I've created in my head, but more to do with something that's actually going on in my brain. Very big difference. And I truly believe that if you speak compassionately and speak from a perspective of honesty, even if the person doesn't understand what you're saying, they still try. Otherwise, you've lost the attempt also that they're going to make. So, yeah, just...
Like you just mentioned that, you know, as a mental health professional, the kind of things that people have told you in terms of, you know, mental health, and you firsthand seen stigma in that context. What has it been like for you?
It's been tough for a couple of reasons. One, because when I said that this is my profession, this is what I do, the first thing people say is, okay, Paglo ki doctor.
Exactly.
That's like literally the first thing that comes. Yeah, I'm sure every mental health professional in this country has heard that at some point, that you're a Paglo ki doctor. And then the second thing that I sort of experience is, like, they ask me really condescending questions. Like, you know, they're trying to understand, but they're asking the most condescending question ever, that, you know, they'll talk about suicide and they'll make it seem trivial, and make it seem cowardly and make it seem like it had nothing to do with mental illness at all. And that's when, and they're trying to ask me a question, but they put it across to me in such a condescending way that at this point I think that you're trying to make fun of what I do. And that's another thing that I face this constant subliminal humor about what I do, because it's not taken seriously enough. And now post-pandemic, what I have faced is very different, because now suddenly everybody's like, your profession is too good, and you know, you are the people we need, and all of these things, like, you know, amazing things that people are saying about mental health professionals. But now the other thing is, if we ask for money, if I have a fee structure, if I have, like every other profession, you know, you go to a doctor, he charges you anything between, depending on what doctor you've gone to, they can charge you from anything between 200 rupees to 20,000 rupees or so. And it's given without question, because he's doing his job. He's gained an education and this is his job. It's not just a noble profession. But suddenly with mental health professionals, it's like, you're in a noble profession. You are here to help people. You can't take money. And if you're taking money, you can't take so much money. And it's not so much money. But it's the perception towards our profession that we don't have the right to earn money, even though we've spent lakhs of rupees on our education, on our experience, on our expertise, which is not something that everybody has. Third stigma right there is that most people think that anyone can be a counselor, that there's nothing special in what you do and you don't need an education for it. So these are the main three things that I face as a mental health professional. And it's most days I'm able to like tackle it either with humor or with, you know, compassion. But there are days where I just cannot, you know, there are days where I'm ranting on Twitter about it because I have faced something really like horrible that day. So I mean, there are people who understand it. There are the mental health professionals that I've spoken to who face the exact same thing. So I do know that it's our efforts that's also going to change that. And so we have to keep doing what we do without feeling guilty about it.
Do you feel, you know, like, you know, you said, for example, Pagmukha doctor, and we've heard so many things, you know, like where you've even had people coming and saying that, you know, oh, you're running, you know, like a depression ki dukan, or, you know, things like, no, you don't need to do this. Anybody can do this. You're just listening to them. You can't charge people money for listening to them. Do you think somewhere like media, pop culture, social media sort of contributed to this stigma around not just mental health, but also the work that mental health professionals do?
So I wouldn't say that they have contributed to the stigma in the sense of being paid, because I feel like if anything, social media has helped us to get money. I genuinely kudos to social media for that. But what I do feel like media in general has, and I don't think social media, but I do think like cinema, you know, Bollywood cinema, and even some Hollywood cinema, they do contribute to the stigma in the sense of, because they'll always show something bizarre on TV in terms of therapy, where either the therapist is falling in love with the client or the client is falling in love with the therapist, and they'll show like a romantic background about it. And I get that that can happen in reality. I'm not denying it. But I do think that that's like 90% of the cases, it does not happen. So the 10% that it's happening is what's being highlighted. Depending on that, now parents don't want to send their children to therapy because they think they're going to get involved with a much older female or male and be manipulated into it. So that's one thing that I have seen and experienced, in the sense of, now people think that they can come to therapy and hit on their therapist. Like, this is also another thing that we faced, is like people just come to therapy because they're like, so we're chit-chatting, right? Like, so it's cool. Like, this is like what it feels like to be on a date. No, it does not. So it's that, I think, like pop culture has really sort of, you know, it's twisted it in its own way. And you know, there are like several films about this. The other thing that it's twisted is that the person that the therapist is talking to is always somebody who is having hallucinations or is bipolar. They're not talking about people like anyone and everyone can go to therapy. They're not talking about how therapy is for everybody. It does not need to be for certain classified diagnosed people only, you know, which is another thing I feel has created the stigma that I can't go because my problem is not that big, which is another thing I hear a lot, is like, I can't go for this because my problem is not that big. It's not that, I'm not hallucinating. Why should I see a therapist? So I think that that's another thing that has added to the stigma. But in terms of respect towards mental health professionals, I think social media has really helped us with that. So that I will like give thanks to social media too.
So, you know, one of the things around therapy and mental health help is like the label aspect, right? Like as you said right now, that, you know, sometimes people feel this label carries a lot of weight with it. So do you think that labels in themselves sometimes can hold people back from seeking help?
Yes and no. But yes to what you're saying for sure. But no, because some people actually want the label. You know, they want to be classified as something just so that they have clarity, so that they have peace of mind that this is not them. This is an illness. You know, sometimes labels are very, very weighty. Like they take off that weight from you, because otherwise you're constantly blaming yourself for being extra particular, being a perfectionist, being, you know, paranoid, things like that. Like if you just have the label that, you know, you have some anxiety, it kind of takes off the weight that, okay, great, I'm suffering from something, right? I'm not making this problem up. I'm not creating this issue. But yes, on the flip side of things, there are people who don't want these labels. There are people who don't want to come to terms with the fact that I will be called depressed. I will be called a parent, or like I will be called OCD or whatever, you know, so they don't want that label. I do think that stops people. I don't think that I have interacted with too many people like that. Because I do think that millennials are not like that.
Right.
Because millennials love labels, even though they don't want them, they still love them.
Also, the other thing is that, you know, when it comes to like a label, sometimes, of course, it helps to know what it is, to just be able to like literally call it by a name, that it's not, it maybe to that extent, you know, reduces the fear of the unknown, that okay, I know, you know, what I'm going through is depression. But the other hand, you know, as you said, like millennials and especially Gen Z, the problem sometimes comes is when they start self-diagnosing themselves. You know, you've gone on the internet, you've read a bunch of things, and you concluded that, oh, I'm having a panic attack, or, you know, I'm suffering from depression. And I'm like, how did you come to that conclusion? It's the internet. And that's why even then they start not wanting help or not wanting to speak out, because you're concerned that, oh, like this is what I know that this label comes with. You know, coming back to stigma, I think, do you feel that sometimes that stigma can become a barrier to, you know, actually extending help to someone else? Like if you know someone who's struggling, let's say with bipolar disorder or depression, you may not help them because that stigma has affected you.
Absolutely. I think what you're saying has so much value in it. So there's two parts to what you're saying. One is, you said that people are self-diagnosing. And the other part is that there is stigma because now they think they know what it is versus what it actually is. Right? So with self-diagnosing, this is, we are the Google generation. And from here on out, it is even more Googleized than anything. Mm-hmm. So everything is first taken to Google. We don't even have conversation anymore without it being involved. Like Google is like the third, is like the mistress in every relationship that nobody wants. you know, so I feel like it's like we don't have point of argument anymore because we have Google. So I think that self-diagnosis is definitely a huge concern, especially for mental health professionals and other medical professionals overall, because what we face within the clinic space because of that is a new problem nobody prepared for. And it's only a growing problem because people will come to us with a diagnosis rather than coming to us for a diagnosis. So now this is a new thing that we never thought would have to encounter because we thought, okay, you know, we've studied this, we know, versus now you are coming and telling me, look, I know I have this problem, fix me. Which is really difficult for us to tackle with, and definitely is not always accurate. Because most people are very suggestive. We as human beings are very suggestive creatures. If we read something on Google, we start to physically feel those symptoms without us actually having them. It's called suggestibility. It's something that we all go through. It's not like only certain kind of people go through this and certain don't. We're all human. We're all equally human. And we all go through this. So when you actually, and this is for people watching this, like for if you are somebody who's going on Google and you know, trying to understand what's going on with you, you're better off speaking to a person because Google, what it's going to do is going to tell you everything under the sun. Everything under the sun is not going on with you. Probably 3 out of those things are going on with you and you've now read 20 others which are now going to act just because you've read them. Because our brain works that way. If I tell you, that's how horoscope works. If I tell you you're going to have a bad week, you're most likely going to have a bad week. So if the online diagnosis tells you that along with having panic attacks, you also get migraines, tomorrow you're going to have a migraine just because it's been suggested to you. And our body, our mind is actually that strong. It can influence our body that deeply. We may think that it doesn't have that impact, but it does. So for the Google generation, mental illness is not supposed to be self-diagnosed. Please don't do that. Even we as therapists don't do it. We also see other therapists. We also see other mental health professionals for the same thing. Because otherwise, everything we read in a book, we feel we have it. It's called the doctor syndrome. When you read something, you feel you have it. So medical student syndrome is what it's called. So yeah, I mean, there's a name for everything also. So, you know, I don't mean to give labels, but it is what it is called. And to the other side of what you were saying, whether my knowledge of what I know about this problem is stopping me from actually helping someone now is a huge issue, you know, and this is a big issue we see with addiction more than anything else. And especially with now addiction being a younger age problem rather than a mid-40s problem. When we talk to young adults who have alcohol addiction, narcotics addiction, things like that, they know that their friends are going through it and have no interest in helping them. That's because addiction is portrayed so negatively. It's not even portrayed as a mental illness. It's portrayed as a personality problem, that you are a wrong individual. That's why you're doing this. Addiction is a mental illness, and it has its own, you know, the neurotransmitters that work in terms of and create those impulses, create those desires, those cravings within you are not in the control of this person. So it's not like you don't have willpower or you don't love us and that's why you're doing this. So I do feel what you're saying is so, so, so true. And the area I have witnessed it is definitely addiction.
And then another thing, I mean, you mentioned addiction. Another concern is also around suicide prevention, right? Especially last year when you saw that whole news story blow up. But, you know, suddenly it was like, oh my God, what if I'm helping someone and this happens and then everything's going to come on me? Or that even if it's bipolar, oh, this person is so volatile, I don't know when they're going to get aggressive. Let's not help that person. Like, you will just run. You know, and unfortunately, I think that's where the stigma comes in, right? Like the misinformation or the perceptions that you have around a certain illness really become a barrier to actually you trying to help someone or actually getting them help. Coming back again with that too, also, you're not trying hard enough. Like mental illness is somehow a weakness. It is a character problem. It's not something that's wrong with your brain. It's you. It's just you not trying hard enough and that you can do better. I do think we look at mental illness as a weakness.
I think, like I said before, it's because we don't know enough. We don't know the causes of it. We don't understand it. We don't understand neurobiology, our neurotransmitters, neuroplasticity. We don't understand how the brain functions for us to know whether it's real or not. And even if the few people that do understand it, the little bit that we do understand it, they are also very few people, right? Like, I've also met medical professionals who don't look at mental illness as a real problem. Medical professionals, they've studied this. They've done their MBBS 5 years. They've been to medical school. Everyone has a psych rotation in medical school. It's not unknown. Everyone studies the brain. Everybody is studying the neurobiology, whichever medical school you're in. I have met medical professionals who qualify mental illness as not a real problem. So it really comes down to, do we know enough about this? You know, and I think the more we'll know, the more we'll be able to educate ourselves and educate other people. And I do think that that trend has started where people are actually now talking about how biology is so interlinked with us having depression or anxiety, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia, any of that, any. But biology is so intertwined with it, which I think people just didn't consider. You know, they you know, when people say it's in your head, yes, it is in my head, but my head is a part of my body. So, which I think people just don't like. They're like, it's in your head means it's not real. No, it's as real as the next thing, because the head is a part of my body. You know, like the mind and body are intertwined in ways that we'll never understand, probably. So I do think that it doesn't seem real. It seems like a weakness. It seems like a personality defect, because I can't show them my brain scan and be like, look here, it says depression. Unless they would believe it.
Right. And I guess maybe that's why sometimes people, you know, if you come with a crepe bandage, they're not going to be like, oh, you're faking this to not play PE. That's very genuine. But if I say I'm having an anxiety issue, no, no, you're faking it. And that could come down to maybe you just don't understand it, right? So taking that forward, do you think people are actually aware all the time that they're actually perpetuating stigma, or do you think a lot of it is just unintentional?
I don't think people are aware, honestly. I don't think people know. People who are stigmatizing other people don't know what stigma is in that scenario. That's why they are doing it, because they don't even know. Like, it's like, you know, when you see racism happen so casually, it's because they don't realize that it's racism, because it's so normal to say something that discriminates one from the other. It's so normal that they don't even realize that they've said something that has discriminated two people. Even fat shaming, you know, fat shaming happens so casually because it's so normal to tell someone that, oh my God, you need to lose weight, without realizing what impact it can have on them. And I do think that's the same for mental illness. It's so normal to say that, you know, that you're doing this to seek attention, or it's in your head, or think positive thoughts, or you can control this. This is in your power. There is nothing like depression. It's not real. Because you actually believe that. You actually somewhere believe that this is the truth, which is the point of problem, right? Which I don't think people who are creating the stigma know that they're doing it, which is why we need awareness, because the people who are doing it are absolutely oblivious that they're doing it.
Right.
And this is where, you know, when I was saying that when you're having conversation with people, you can't talk from a point of arrogance or a point of superiority, is because it's so easy to look at someone and be like, how did you not know this?
Yeah.
Like, how can you say this? How? It's so easy to do that, because it's so easy for us to sit from a point of privilege of knowledge. Knowledge is also privilege, you know. So it's to sit from that point of privilege and say that you don't know this. They're exposed to it. They don't know it because who is there to tell them about it? And if that's in some scenarios, there are people who are told about it and still don't want to accept it. That's totally different. But I do believe that with most people, it is because, arey hame pata hi nahi hai, toh fir.
Where do you think culture plays a role in this entire thing? You know, I know earlier at the beginning, we just touched upon it in terms of, you know, in India, we say, you know, it should stay at home, but in a more broader context.
I think culture plays a huge role, because everyone in India loves giving unsolicited advice, which means everyone over here is a self-proclaimed counselor, which is, and this is like, as a mental health professional, this hurts the most for me because, you know, it's not an easy job. Let's start with that. Secondly, it's not an easy education. So for us to see that people are like, I'm a counselor because I gave advice to my children, I don't think that that's fair. But this happens only here. I do not see this happen in any other country at all. So it's a very cultural thing that, you know, we always as a culture had the old women's tales, you know, like everyone would go to the most senior person, talk to them, get their advice, and that senior person would then train someone else to do the same thing. And, you know, it's a very cultural thing that A, everything stays at home, B, we all can help you better than anyone else can help you because we know you better. Now, that's another point of stigma that, which again is a very cultural aspect to India, is that only someone who knows me can help me, which is so not true anywhere else in the world. Even over here, we have a system of having a doctor from birth to death, the same doctor. Like, nobody, no other country really follows this at all. We have this concept that I can call my family doctor at even 4 in the morning and he has to answer my phone call because he's my family doctor and he only knows. So I can't go to an emergency room. I have to call him, which is not a concept that follows through in any other country. So I do think that it also comes from that you know, everything stays in a close-knit unit. Only people who know you can help you. Whereas with therapy, in fact, it's the opposite. The more unbiased opinion you get, the better it is for you. Which is something like as a cultural concept, we are not able to register. And till date, I face this issue even with people who are extremely educated. You know, my friends who are millennials, have all the knowledge, have all the awareness about mental illness. They'll still come and tell me, but you know, if I ever seek therapy, I'll come to you because I can't go to someone else. They don't know me. I was like, but the point is that they shouldn't know you. I know you. I know too much. And I will not be able to help you unbiasedly. They're like, we don't want it unbiased. We want it with that. So it's a very, it's like I said, very cultural aspect that, you know, it's the feeling of this person knows me, they'll be able to help me. But that's really not the truth, especially when it comes to therapy. It's not the truth. And in other terms, I think culturally, we've also looked at mental illness as something very paranormal through our lives. I mean, you know, it's also shown in movies all the time. So our Bollywood culture sort of even promotes that, you know, if this person is having a seizure, it's not a seizure, she's possessed. And so on and so forth. You know, like everyone's seen this. We've seen this in so many phases. Like even the movie Bhool Bhulaiya, it originally started as a mental health film and then turned into like they made it about like her being possessed. And there is a debate about it, you know, in the film that is it a mental illness? Is it a possession and things like that? And they've sort of misconstrued the point there. So it kind of puts that across, like even in our culture, that there's always a shadow of what if she's possessed or what if he's possessed and this is not actually schizophrenia or hallucinations. What if this person is actually possessed? Mm-hmm. So these, I think, would be our cultural barriers for sure, but that add to the stigma. Nothing else that I can think of.
I think you're quite right in terms of, you know, possessed. I guess if you see rural settings, you know, maybe that's why a lot of times they believe this is like an evil spirit and you'll hear of, you know, black magic or, you know, all kinds of things being done to people in the name of this is not a mental illness, you've been possessed. Moving forward, like, I think the flip side to stigma seems to have come out in this whole romanticization of mental illness. You know, when people are like, this is my blessing, this is the best thing that could have happened to me, or, you know, my depression is my superpower. Like, you've heard things like that, you've seen things like that on social media, we all have. You know, how risky do you think that is?
To be very honest, I don't think it's risky. And I'll tell you why. There are two kinds of people, okay, always in every scenario. There are people who, if they've broken their leg, if they've amputated their leg permanently, are the people who are going to accept that they've amputated their leg and move on. And then there are those who are going to make it a victory in their life. You want to turn that adversity around, turn the challenge around, and turn it into a victory. There's always two kinds of people. And there's always two kinds of people when it comes to adversity. And mental illness does come as adversity to everyone. So it really depends on people. It really depends from person to person on how you want to turn that around for yourself. There's no right way. There's no wrong way. There's just what makes you, what works for you way. You know. So I do think that making mental illness your superpower or having you believe that for yourself at least does have value in it for you. Doesn't mean it should be thrown on everyone's faces and made and everyone should believe the same thing. But for me, that has value. When I talk about my anxiety, I do talk about it as a superpower because I do believe that my anxiety makes me better at my work, better at social relationships, better when I travel, more organized, all of these things. But that also was a journey. I didn't believe that from the get-go. I struggled with my anxiety day in and day out, had panic attacks 3 times a day. Then it was never my superpower. Then it was something that was taking away all my capabilities. But at the point that I found the balance between it taking over my life and it benefiting my life is when I turned it into a superpower for myself. And I have used this statement in several places that my anxiety is my superpower, not implying that that's how it is for everybody. But on the flip side of things, yes, I do agree that for somebody who is not in that space as where I am, say I'm calling anxiety my superpower, but that someone that I'm talking to is not in that space and is crippled by their anxiety, I don't think that what I'm saying can add value to that person then, because then I'm actually devaluing what they are going through. And I understand that that is the flip side of it. But I do think that everyone has a right to express what helps them. It may not help everybody, and that is the disclaimer everyone should be giving. But I don't think that it's fair for any of us to sit here and say, don't glamorize mental health. But glamorizing it may help you. Telling people about that I went for therapy may actually help you. So do it. But don't throw it in someone's face and expect them to do the same thing.
Right.
Because that's not how their way of dealing with their mental illnesses. There are still some, I talk about therapy very openly in any scenario. It doesn't matter now whether I'm with family, I'm with colleagues, I'm with friends. It doesn't matter at all, right? I will say that I have therapy at 12:30 on Monday and nothing is going to come in the way of that. You all can reschedule everything else. But at the same time, I do know people who wouldn't do the same thing. So I'm not going to be like, you should do what I do, because that's not your way to cope. But I don't think that what I'm doing is wrong. Even though it may seem like I've put up a selfie after my therapy session saying post-therapy glow. Even if I've done that, I don't think that I'm glamorizing it and devaluing you. I just think that I am expressing myself in a way that suits me. But I don't think that that would suit everybody. So it's a complicated scenario. It's kind of borderline on right or wrong. But there are lots of things like that. And I think mental illness is the one thing that needs. You know how when pride parades had started, everyone was like, what is the need of this? Okay, this is something I heard all the time. That, okay, yes, you can be gay. Why do you do this? That's also stigma. It's the same thing. Like, okay, you can have a mental illness, but don't talk about it. It's also stigma. Why can't I talk about it? Why can't I be... If there can be a pride parade, I understand why they need it and I'm all for it. But if there can be a pride parade, then I can also be putting up a selfie saying that I had a great therapy session. If there's pride in both, you know. So I do think that there's a time for everything. And, you know, one of my favorite authors, Andrew Solomon, he's a gay activist and he also writes about mental health. He spoke about, you know, how someone in the conversation had told him that, don't you think like the gay community has gone too far with the pride, the LGBT community has gone too far with the pride parade. Don't you think they need a humility week instead? What he meant was that maybe we've taken this too far and we need to chill out. But what Andrew Solomon replied to him was that today we need this. Today we need a pride parade, and there will come a time when the LGBT community will have a humility week because they'll need to chill out. But today is not that day, and I hope that there comes a time that we need a humility week, which means that we've reached a point where we have equal rights.
Right.
And that's the same thing I feel with mental health. There won't be a need to glamorize it. But today, maybe there is that need. But today, maybe we do need to make it look glamorous in order for us to get people to accept it.
You know, coming to the semantics around mental health, like, what do you think, you know, the role of, you know, our language is, especially when it comes to stigma? Like, you know, Vincent, some people will say that, you know, and I've heard this from people who call themselves mental health advocates, that, you know, I didn't kill myself because I was more rational than that. or I'm concerned that I may infect my child with my mental illness. So, like, you know, things like that, like the language that we use, I think it's beyond just talking about the phrase committed suicide, but on a broader spectrum. Like, where do our semantics fit in?
So I'm actually not the right person for this question, and I'll tell you why. Because I believe semantics is just that, semantics. And I know that it has a larger impact, and I know that, you know, words have huge impact. But at the end of the day, earlier, being called retarded was a bad word. Like, was a word that was removed to classify people below normal intelligence as retarded. Now retarded became a bad word. So they called it differently abled. Tomorrow that will become a bad word. Because semantics is just that. When you talk about the other end of the spectrum, when you're saying that, you know, when people are talking, when they are like threading a thin line between being an advocate and being someone who's actually adding to stigma because of a semantic, you know, the phrases you used, but I rationalized it, or I don't want to infect my children. When you used, when you're saying those things, I do believe, yes, semantics do play a role, and they do have a huge impact, because the people listening to you may interpret it differently. But that is the case with anything. I can say it all right and it still be interpreted differently. So that's why I feel like semantics is just that, it's semantics. And I always use semantics as like the differing factor in argument. Like, you know, when someone says you are mad versus I say I have depression, I'll just say semantics. You know, you can call me mad, but at the end of the day, what my madness is to you is my illness to me. So it's semantics. And this is my point of difference with most people, that, you know, your word is different from my word, but the meaning is the same. So you can call it another word if you like. But having said that, I do think it has detrimental factors. I do think that it impacts people largely, especially when you call mental illness infectious. Definitely that's not the truth in any way or form. Chune se nahi phailti hai ye bimari. Please relax. But I think people can, you know, pinpoint on anything and make a big deal out of it, which is what I think social media has taught us, that if I put a picture of the rain, and if in the news the next day even one person died because of the rain, I'm suddenly the bad person. Because I put a picture of the rain. It has no linkage. And that's how I feel even words are, especially when it comes to mental health advocates on Instagram. Like, most of them don't know what they're saying. But who am I to go around to tell someone that they know or don't know? Am I as arrogant as the next person then, right? So, semantics is just that. Semantics. This is what I say.
So when it comes to ending the stigma, Jesse, what do you feel that, you know, like young people can do in that regard? Like, how can they help end the stigma?
This is my favorite question, because I have a very epic line to say. Again, I'm stealing this from Andrew Solomon, who stole it from Harvey Milk. So Harvey Milk was a LGBTQ activist in the 60s, you know, a very young gay male went to him and asked him that, you know, Mr. Milk, I want to do something for this community. What can I do? And his answer was, just go out and talk about it. That's it. And from that day on, Andrew Solomon has quoted this. And from the day I heard him quote it, I've been quoting this, is if you want to end the stigma, if you want to contribute to the cause of mental health, you don't need to start a page. You don't need to be another blog. You don't need to be another podcast. You don't need to be a mental health professional. All you need to do is talk about it. That's it. Start a conversation, bring it to the dinner table, talk about it in different settings, educate yourself on it, read about it, understand it, talk to real people who've lived with it. That's it. Just talk about it. That's all. Even if the conversation starts from a point of ignorance, it will end somewhere else. That's what the beauty of conversation is. The beauty of knowledge and passing knowledge through conversation is just that. So I would just say talk about it.
So another thing is that, you know, there's a lot of talk right now about the new normal. So what is something that you want to see in the new normal, especially from a mental health perspective?
Wow, too many. That's true. I think something I do want to see in the new normal is the stigma in corporate India to be like the stigma about mental health in corporate India and how much it is hidden and I mean, the efforts that corporates in India take to hide mental health issues, if they took that many efforts to just highlight them instead, I think we'd be a much happier country. Because right now we are ranked number one in the depression scale. So I think we'd be a much happier country if we just allowed ourselves to talk about it. Because that's what we're not allowed to do in corporate India. We're not allowed to talk about it. Because if we do, we lose our job, we get pay cuts, change teams, people won't want to work with us. And if I, God forbid, if there is a suicide in a corporate, media is not allowed to post about it. Media is paid off, things like that. So I just feel like if the country knew what was really happening, there'd be more effort to do something about it. So I think that suppressing it is only making it worse, said the psychologist. I guess I'm speaking as a mental health professional. So I guess, yeah, suppressing anything just makes it worse. It's same in the corporate world, like suppressing mental health concerns is only making it worse. So I think that's the new normal that I'd like to see.
So signing off, Jasdeep, what would be, you know, your parting words to anyone who's having a hard time with their mental health right now?
I don't want to be cliched, so I'm not. I'm not going to say reach out. I'm not going to say that. I'm going to say find hope, because hope exists everywhere. And your version of hope can be different from mine, but find hope, because that is the only thing that keeps anyone going. And hope can look different for everybody. Hope can be religion. Hope can be friendship. Hope can be family. Hope can be a professional. Hope can be a support group. Hope can be an Instagram page. Hope can be anywhere. But find hope in your life. Create hope for yourself. Because when everything falls apart, the only thing that stands by you is actually hope. So that's what I would say.
Thank you for that. And thank you for your time. It's been a very enriching and insightful session. And for anybody who's watching this, if at any point should you feel, you know, that you're having a struggle and you need help with your mental health, just know that, you know, there's always hope, but there's also always help available. And it does get better. So you don't have to be suffering through this alone. And on that note, till next time, please stay well and stay healthy. Thank you.